right, welcome back to this very special live edition of Friends from Work live here in Austin, Texas. I am your host, Kyle Scunnell, and I'm joined by my longtime friend from work and co-host, Robbie Earle. If you're just finding this podcast, thanks for tuning in. We're so excited to have you here. It doesn't always look like this. This is really fun for us. This is live together in Austin. And wow, we just walked out of an incredible theater experience watching Thunderbolts. And so I'm anticipating this episode being a very long thing. I have no notes and yet so many things I want to get into. And so I think without further ado, then let's just get going. No time. Definitely one of those no time things. It's late on a Monday night. Okay, Robbie, we like to kick off these episodes. First of all, hi. Good to see you again. We like to kick off these episodes with what we call a big three, our big three takeaways from this film. Man, how are you doing?
It's so funny because we watch these and one, I am a big, like Candace talks about this too whenever we go see the movies. On my part of the reason I like rewatching movies is because you unlock a lot of different experiences, both like your relationship with the movie, but also I feel like you can have more of a like side by side relationship. I'm so locked in on my
first view. You're a sphinx, man. It's tough. He's a tough viewing partner.
It's true.
I literally know what Candace means now.
Look, I am there to do a job.
Yeah.
And that job is to watch that movie. But then we come back and we haven't really talked about it because in part, once we start talking, then it's hard to. So yeah, we haven't really gotten to talk about it yet. I thought it was incredible. I have like a couple of things off the bat that I think are the biggest things that are all in this instance positives. I actually can't think of any negatives for this movie right now, which I love. I'm sure there are some, but I had such
Today
a great time.
Is not that day.
No, it's so I will probably there are others that I know I want to hit that I feel very passionately about, but these are the three that I have to hit at the top. The first one, I was sitting there thinking on the ride home. This movie gave me what I was hoping Brave New World would give me. Like not in terms of like, obviously they're different tone, they're different like subjects, but I was really expecting Brave New World to feel like I was back in the MCU and that there was this sort of like connective tissue and that it felt like we were picking something up. And it just never really felt like that to me. It felt like a continuation of Falcon Winter Soldier and the Incredible Hulk, which was cool in its own way, but it didn't feel like we were really picking up threads from like the Infinity Saga, like writ large, or even like more importantly, the Phase 4, Phase 5 threads,
the multiverse saga.
And, or yeah, just any of like, it felt like I came away from that without much more than I came in. And then that was following up on Deadpool and Wolverine, which was so fun, but also didn't really like move the ball anywhere.
Right.
And even the Marvels, you know, like before that, like, which we are not as down on the Marvels as a lot of people are, but
no,
didn't
like
really move things forward. Like,
yeah, to the post-credit sequence. Yeah.
And so this was, it's not like.
Yes.
Like, and I want to clarify, it's not like, oh, you just have to like, just move the ball forward. I'm just like an MCU shill. I just want like my next installment. It's not that. It's that you like the joy of the MCU and the value of it and the thing that separates it like as an overall entity from everything else is that you start to feel like it's a lived in
correct
universe. And so when you lose that and everything feels so like, okay, snapshot, 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 like that's fun at first, but then it stops feeling like the MCU at some point. It just starts feeling like Marvel Studios made another movie. And so this like, the way that it did it so like frequently, like Candace was just asking me.
Yes. That was one of my big three too. It never got fan service-y,
exactly.
But still did all of the things that fans wanted to do. Like when I said multiverse saga, I'm not meaning that it has to literally be connected with incursions,
right.
But during this era, there are things like as small as references to Brave New World and The Last President, at least like centering it.
Right.
But then as large as obviously the second post-credit sequence.
Yeah. Which felt.
But even them talking about Sam Wilson before the Fantastic Four vehicle shows up, it was like. Yeah, because that's what's so funny is it. I wrote down in my original social media review that it was connected, but it really wasn't. It's a weird thing, right? Because it wasn't like that much more. It wasn't like this was the movie that was like cameo after cameo.
That's the
and
thing.
Connectivity in that way. So it was not fan service-y at all. But yes, something about the tone and the amount of connectedness felt like the most appropriate version of the MCU. Like I felt like, oh, I know this New York.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's exactly like. That was the thing that bummed me out about Brave New World at parts is it just didn't feel like a recognizable like not like Anthony Mackie's Sam Wilson was for sure Sam Wilson. I'm not saying that there was like a character issue. It's literally like the world in part because you're introducing like a you know Harrison Ford, so there's a recasting there, but like so much of the cast was new. Which is also kind of fine, but then like the locale was all like, it just didn't, there was something about it that didn't feel like grounded in that same, like grounded, not realistic, but grounded like in the history of the movies that preceded it. But well, here,
that's a good point too. Like, I mean, even just the characters you're dealing with though, like, yeah, that's part of the connectedness. It's just that we finally have like a team up thing.
And it's like, I think it's really remarkable. It feels so organic and unforced, and in that way it's like we've talked about this on and off for a bit about the Guardians comparisons, and I definitely do feel that, like the kind of like it's what's the word I'm looking for, irreverent, you know, it's sort of got that like it, we know who these characters are and we're not really trying to make it something that it isn't. But then you still have those moments that because of that feel
irreverent in like Yelena saying we suck.
Right, right. Like, I mean, in the same way that Guardians is, I think, because it's like Guardians is still a very sincere film.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what this is. It's like, it is very sincere, but it is also like willing to kind of have fun and poke fun at itself. Mm. And so I feel like that, the whole tone is so like Guardians-esque in that way, obviously a different brand of humor, but like there are bits of that DNA. But I think what's so remarkable is like James Gunn's Guardians did not do any of this stuff because that just wasn't the design of the film. Like,
not to say it's better than Guardians right away.
No, it's
but
not.
100%. Yeah. It was also doing something different there. It wasn't even trying to be connected in that the very first Guardians. Yeah, they're off world for the majority of it, other than the first scene. And so it's not even trying, other than the Infinity Stones, to tie in. And so, yeah, it is. But, like, you know, you're right about the DNA. The sequence where they're all tied up and then they kind of decide that they can go back and be better felt so Guardians-esque. Yeah. Like, now we're all standing kind of thing.
Yeah, like.
And some of the We Suck jokes and Red Guardian jokes, like. Yeah. But again, even those were so perfectly done because it never pulled you out. They like let you sit in the badness or the heaviness or whatever it was long enough before the joke.
Even setting the humor question to the side, the fact that they were able to balance a story that felt meaningful on its own, it felt like surprising, like you weren't really sure where it was going, like even down to the very end, like when they go, like Val is like luring them into the press conference, which I was not like
right as she started backing up, I guessed it, but like, not until then.
The whole thing was like delightful in that way. Like you didn't quite know what was coming, but then obviously it was very poignant for like it had a theme and a message that I'm excited to get into kind of after the MCU of it all. But the fact that it did all of that and somehow felt more like connected, like I'm trying to think of another MCU multiverse saga project that has felt more central than this one. And not central because like something really huge blew up. But Central, because like it's dealing with the what we think of as like the core of the story.
Right.
Like whatever that is, which we've kind of been missing in a lot of ways.
Right. I gotta be careful not to be such prisoner of the moment, because yeah, I'm already thinking about that part of it too. I'm already thinking like this or No Way Home are the best films since Endgame. And in some ways, this has less like question marks than No Way Home did. No Way Home, because it's dealing with Spider-Man and a character we know. You know, there's some really heavy nostalgia there that I love and like cherish that feeling that maybe this doesn't have. But that's my second point then. Okay. Connectedness is your first point. I agree with that. It's one of mine. My second point was, I just got to talk on the quality perspective for a second, because we talked about this ahead of time a lot. We talked about how it was a very different team. It's a different director. It's a director coming from a totally kind of different world. In fact, they even leaned into that with the marketing. They marketed it as an A24 film, right, as Marvel. They got a new composer, cinematography from the guy who did The Green Knight, and Eric Pearson seems to be rising up in the ranks as far as the script tightening guy. It seems like he's becoming the Marcus and McFeely of this era. And he's doing, like, I'm starting to be aware of it like we were with them.
Yeah.
In that if he's involved. And so this is my second point. From all of the filmmaking things, I didn't have a single question mark the whole time. I never once felt like it looked weird.
Yeah.
I thought it actually looked incredible. Like the cinematography matters. Like I looked at you early on, the shot of the Atlanta taking down the guards, but from above, and their shadows being
the
cast.
The shadows,
was such a unique way to show a hallway fight.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a one-er.
Yeah.
As she makes her way through. Obviously, we've talked about the practical effects, like how fun it felt to see the cars blow up and roll over, and they actually blew up and rolled over.
Yeah.
And then the visualization of the void and the people being canceled was incredible looking, just like disappearing, something so unique and fresh we really haven't seen. I can't remember anything like that.
Yeah.
And then I just felt like
you're calling that canceling. Yeah. It's like a movie about cancel culture.
That's what it is. That's the lesson. And then you talked about nothing felt forced earlier. That's also how I felt about the entire plot and dialogue.
Yeah.
The script was a masterclass, in my opinion. I don't want to overstate it, but I was laughing when I was supposed to laugh. I was getting choked up when I was supposed to get choked up. It never felt slow to me. And it never felt rushed. A nearly perfect script for me. And then I feel like you got a lot of really great performances. And this just shows you why it matters to get all of these kinds of actors and filmmakers this invested.
Yeah. Oh,
because like when Florence Pugh feels this strongly about it, you get stuff like this. This is how I felt with Elizabeth Olsen in WandaVision.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of leadership I want in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And then the music, I can't remember every single theme or every single song, but multiple times during the project, I turned to Robbie and said, wow, this feels like a fresh, new, different kind of take. Oh, and one last thing. The actual character designs looked so freaking great.
Yeah.
The void visualization was so elite.
Yeah.
On both the Sentry side and how what that fight looked like and how
the Taskmaster design was so great for like 5 seconds.
Taskmaster Ghost's new Ghost helmet was so cool. Much cooler.
Yeah.
So just quality wise, that's my second point.
I do want to say on that before we move on, the score was also my favorite Marvel score in recent memory. Like I'm trying to think back to. Because again, I'm like going backwards, and it doesn't always have to be the comparison game. But I think what's interesting here is like, this is not a movie that I came out of like over the top, like, oh my gosh, what did I just watch? Like prisoner of the moment where it's just like, and this was great, and this was great, and this was great. And I've felt that way before, and there's nothing wrong with feeling that way. But those are the times when I've learned to like I can both have experienced that, like when I saw it, like I could have enjoyed it just the way that I felt, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all those things are true objectively. But this is one of those where I just feel like it's not me being like on a hype train. All of these things were just objectively so well done. And it's been a bit like, I've enjoyed a lot of scores, but it's really fun for me to think like this is probably a new like high point for me musically.
It was very non-traditional too, because there were three times I think that I looked at you and said, this is a really awesome song. And it wasn't necessarily a song that I expected in the moment.
Yeah.
Man, I need to see it again. But there were specifically a couple of times where, yeah, we are, where he like really leaned into like an emotional moment while they were still kind of like doing some action type stuff. The emotional music was still playing, if that makes sense. Yeah. There were a few times like that where I was like, this is very different.
Well, but it's funny because then there would be moments that like I was thinking going into it and thinking about Everything Everywhere, like, okay, this is going to be kind of a really like it's going to be very different. It's going to be non-traditional. But then I was kind of surprised whenever I saw them in that interview talk about how like John Williams was a big influence for them for this movie.
Yeah, there were still hints of traditional.
Yeah, it was like symphony. Little, just enough though, like just enough to make it feel kind of like not even epic, because right. The epic was covered by like just how cool the sound was generally.
Good point.
But they could kind of like it added some warmth.
Right. It wasn't as synth heavy even as I thought maybe. Or
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It non-traditional was like, and yet with flourishes of traditional still.
Which is the dream. I mean, that's that. Like, honestly, that's what I love so much about like Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah, this is your scene. Because yeah. It's very much like a Black Panther type thing.
Yeah. Which is just like, and those are the, like, that's what moves the ball forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's one of the other big three?
The new Avengers, man.
Yeah, yeah, you call. Hey, look at you.
You know, I got the tone. Look who's on the inside cover here. You see that?
Is that Sentry? Can you get this at Organic Price Books?
You can.
OrganicPriceBooks.com, promo code Friends From Work, official comics partner of Friends From Work.
This was on the on our newsletter recommendation a couple weeks ago.
That is massive, by the way.
Yeah, it is. And that's only like half of it.
Yeah, you called it honestly from like 6 months ago, maybe even longer, that name was going to mean something. They really waited a long time in the film to announce it. But it really did mean something. They changed the title. Yeah. And then I really thought the credit sequence was masterful.
Yeah, yeah, it was really fun.
It was funny, but also, oh man, with the time jump of 14 months later and seeing all these like historical paintings and stuff recreated, but then like, can we do it? ? You know, and like, we can do it and things like that. I thought that was really clever.
It was tonally right on, but I loved it for like a lot of reasons. And I'm trying to figure out which one to say first. One, like, even I'm pretty sure, and I'll have to check back. This is the problem with like seeing these before they're out, but like, I think that they use this exact font
whenever they do, similar,
which is like an iconic, like, for people that don't know, in 2005, Brian Michael Bendis and David Finch launched the New Avengers, which was the first time that that had really existed in that way. You had like kind of Avengers offshoots. But the big difference was Marvel had been going through, like, this was coming out of the 90s kind of bankruptcy period, and they hadn't really figured out how to sell the Avengers as they were moving into kind of the modern period. And someone had the idea to put all of Marvel's just most famous heroes on a new team and call that the New Avengers. And so because they were like, no one really cares about, like, the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, but everybody cares about Spider-Man and Wolverine. And so it's like it's like the best of the main Avengers. And then like all the other like marquee superheroes come together. And it wound up being the story that really like most of the Infinity Saga pulled from, that was kind of born out of that. And a big part of that storyline was like Tony Stark buying this or putting the Avengers in Avengers Tower and recruiting the Sentry, who Tony then like watches over because Tony's terrified because he's like almost playing the Yelena role.
Real quick, was the Sentry's creation similar in the comics to what it was here?
So yeah, it's fascinating. I won't go all the way down on this, but it is really interesting because in the comics, he is a meth addict, but he breaks into a lab and basically like steals what winds up being like a, you know, super serum and transforms himself into that. But he's also like,
I was a meth addict, remember? With the chicken.
I was on meth. But it was like he had the same kind of like not amnesia, but like blackouts where he would forget whole things. And that was like where the void would come in. So he then like creates, he's so powerful that he like creates like an alternate history for himself where he imagines that he actually got his powers in this very classic comic booky way. And there are all these like comic book style, like old school comic book style pages in New Avengers. And it's like the way he's remembering his life and him like, and so that's the whole thing. It's like not that he is part of like a medical trial. It's that he kind of rewrites himself as the Sentry, which you did get. Like, I thought what was really impressive about this movie is
like one of many things.
Well, it's like, yeah, but something that the MCU like can sometimes do, not often, but sometimes it will reference something that I love that I feel like there's so much for them to dig into and they just kind of like pick it up for a second and drop it. And you're like, that's okay. Like, I get what you're doing. You're serving another story, but I kind of hate that there was a lot there that you could have hung out in. And this is a movie where like what they did with the Sentry, even if we never got any more of Bob, and I think we will, but even if we didn't, they did such a great job of exploring like everything that Brian Bendis teased out for years over a comic in 1 2-hour movie, while also doing so many other, like taking all the characters really through some stage of an arc. So I was like, the New Avengers, all of it, like, I love the Sentry piece. I love how much they're like playing with the imagery of like them being in the, like in Avengers Tower. Even at the very end, like they are actually the Avengers living in that tower now. But it's exactly what I thought, like what I think would make sense for these characters to now be involved in Doomsday. Like when all the casting stuff was announced, I was thinking like it's gonna feel a little forced if someone's like, let's call the Thunderbolts, because like who's gonna, like if you're looking at like all these like multiversal players, but now it makes sense because like these
Shane's tires. What was like, Shane's?
Shane did not have that kind of money. Yeah,
dude, that was funny.
It's funny.
Okay. 100%. And then that's going to transition me perfectly, if you don't mind, into my third point.
Yeah.
Which is the post-credit sequence was phenomenally done. Yeah. I had chills. This is how you do a post-credit scene. Teasing a future thing, but still tying up stuff from the film.
Yeah.
Never felt forced. It didn't feel like they, like Kevin Feige came in and said, you got to do this Fantastic Four thing.
Right.
But just absolute chills to the highest degree when the Fantastic Four ship shows up and the music plays and you see the four logo on the ship. But there's a lot to talk about here, and this is why I wanted,
yeah,
this is a big three. One, you know, we talk about Bob. It says Bob will return. And, you know, first of all, him as the Sentry in that one fight against the Thunderbolts was unbelievable. Like the visualization of him catching Ghost when she's phasing and ripping Bucky's arm off and he overheating it and throwing Red Guardian out the window, but then sucking him back in.
Yeah.
And like just purposely and like intentionally disarming each one of his foes so easily. So cool. Obviously, as we've talked about so many times with characters like Captain Marvel or like Superman, when you get to that level of power,
it's a
dangerous game because you start asking questions kind of like, why do you need to call Ava for, like, why do you call Ghost if you have Sentry?
Yeah.
Like, what can she really contribute against, like, an all-powerful being that he can't? Like, can she really? It's kind of like one of those memes of, like, I'm doing stuff. You know, there's a little bit of that. I think they're maybe going about it the right way, because the post-credit sequence talks about how he's like, well, no, I can't. I can't do that unless I become the Void, which I think is like a perfect place to kind of live. It's kind of very Scarlet Witch-esque for me in a good way, where maybe that way he's off the board most of it. And then if something goes really haywire, maybe there's a situation like Scarlet Witch or like the Hulk where the team views it or deems it necessary to even have the bad side come out too.
Yeah, like, but yeah.
Go ahead and unleash him, knowing this might turn into the Void, but we are out of options. Like the rain fire kind of thing from Thanos.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah.
And so that's probably the way to go about it, because you can't just have him constantly in like that kind of outfit living in Avengers Tower, because it just diminishes everybody else right away. And I think this is the right way to go about it. So they're even conscious of that, I think.
And that's like, that's another thing that I you know, Bendis had to deal with that all through the run, because you have like Iron Man and Spider-Man and then like the Sentry on the team. And yeah, it's like, what's the point of, because it's basically established that he's like at the very top of the hierarchy, but he, because he was like so unstable, they like kept him squirreled away. And then there would be a like, okay, we are now in a situation where we like need to call Bob in, and they would like get him in and out as quickly as possible, because it's this sort of like, even before they were aware of how extensive like the Void issue was. And then that like whole series ends in this like grand finale where the Void just like goes all out, and it's this like terrifying like kind of like sort of like what a taste of what Thunderbolts was.
But maybe the twist here is that Yelena has legitimately healed him a little bit, and so maybe next time he does it, it's not as strong, the Void part of him, or maybe it's gone.
Yeah, or I mean, it reminds me though of like the, I mean, it is like the Hulk, like it's this kind of tenuous, like, but I don't know. I like that he's like, the fact that he like doesn't even really remember it though is really unnerving.
Yeah. Cause it's like the Hulk, or like I said, like Scarlet Witch, like when she's the actual witch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, Wanda, like, you know, Wanda's not here, it's the Scarlet Witch. Like when she shows up, if I have to come back, it's the Scarlet Witch, it won't be Wanda. That kind of thing. It's kind of like that almost. But my point is like, yes, they have to nerf him some way. So coming up with this being like, he's unstable, he can't do it easily, I think is the right way to go about it. Also, we never talked, but we barely talked on the way home about, just for clarification, did we miss something when Yelena says, now there's a space crisis?
Yeah.
And so we're trying to think, maybe this is one of those things where when you see it early, there's no way to fact check this. So maybe like there's going to be a big matzo ball hanging out later that we look stupid that we don't know. But did we miss something on the space crisis, or is it something off screen during that 14-month thing? Or are they just hinting that like stuff is kind of breaking down with the incursions, or something weird is happening? Yeah. Is that what they mean? Or could they possibly be referring to anything else? Could they possibly be referring to the Marvels or anything like that? I don't know the timeline of that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know.
Or just maybe they're now getting word that there's like these jump points that are falling apart or cracking or seams in the I don't know.
Yeah,
did I miss?
No, that's actually a really good theory, because I mean, that would sort of make sense. I need to rewatch the Marvels with that in mind, and because I just need to remember where it left everybody. I haven't watched that in a second, but I was saying on the way home, you know, if you read the Hickman Avengers comic, that is sort of how the like how you get to Secret Wars, is it starts with what they think are like just like space battles with aliens, but then you realize that like all of that is also kind of being set in motion because there are people that are fleeing the incursions in a sense, or like the things that have been set into motion. So it's like I was thinking it could be something like that we haven't seen yet, but that's a really good point. The Marvels, I think, was trying to show us that, because that's the whole thing with like
there were
the
like
jump
a couple
points.
And there were a couple of like cracks
yeah
of things that weren't working right, and they have to heal that one
yeah
using their power. You know?
And so maybe, so like,
but again, that could be the timeline of that could be all off. I don't know that we ever got, and this is where like some of our listeners can help. I don't know if we ever got a specific marker in that movie of where it was specifically. I get a little bit confused where we are timeline wise, especially when there's a 14-month jump here. Did we jump over that movie kind of thing?
Yeah, that's.
Anyways, either way, that or it's an off screen space crisis. Space, we're not out of space. Outer space. We're not out of space. And then the last thing is, this is all happening just in the post-credit sequence, by the way. That's why I wanted to bring it up as one of my points. Because we also finally then got a Sam Wilson reference. During the credits, you and I were talking, well, the only other person that would be aware of all this or like wanting to know is, wasn't Sam trying to put together a team? So interesting that, yes, Sam is still trying to put together a team.
Yeah.
We were having a brief discussion, who would that even be now? And then Bucky, he doesn't like what Bucky's doing on this other team. That's fascinating. Like, why couldn't they just join teams then?
Yeah.
If Sam trusts Buck as much, why couldn't they join? So interesting dynamic there too. Obviously the joke with the Z and stuff, but it does also bring up another point, which is that, you and I need to do an episode for some people out there who have fallen a little bit behind in the MCU and this movie is going to bring them back. And now they're like wanting to catch up. You and I need to do an episode. Literally, I think just like getting our mind around where everybody is at.
Yeah.
Not only like what has happened in the MCU this far, but also you and I were even having to go, okay, who else could Sam even be assembling?
I feel like Sam could, he could count on any of the OG Avengers, like basically anybody that was in the like Endgame fight.
It's actually a beautiful point to be, because the fact that we can't think of his team is, it helps my mind.
But I do.
Because that way you don't have those questions of like, well, if this is going on, where is this?
But he is trying to like, he has his own team though, which I like. Like there are like, so he does have a team, and I kind of like, I like the idea of Spider-Man being on Sam's team. I could see that. I don't think he would like.
It's important to note, I don't anticipate they're anti each other, right? Like they're not going to, it's not leading to a new Avengers versus old Avengers fight, is it?
No, I mean, I think that it's probably leading.
I think it's more once the whole world is attacked or like incursions or like our reality is falling apart, they'll figure stuff out real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I am curious what it, like, that's obviously, they're both going to be in play in Doomsday. So I guess that's maybe where this will come to a head, but, and then maybe we'll get, yeah, I don't mean it, however Spider-Man fits into that. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, they're not after each other, but I do feel like we're going to have some like conflict between them. And I feel like everyone, like the reason I say Spider-Man is Spider-Man, one, Peter would obviously know Sam. And I think Sam would still remember Spider-Man from like the airport battle and the, like, he wouldn't remember.
He wouldn't know it's Peter Parker, but he would know.
But I actually don't know if Sam ever knew it was Peter Parker anyway.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so do you have a third and final big three?
I have a third and final big three. Okay, go. I had read going into this movie that it was dealing with, just themes of like not like depression or mental health, but that it was dealing with the kind of like self-doubt and like self-torture that comes like from those states and those lows. And that can be done in a way that's so blunt and like so on the nose that it's almost insulting. And the way that they showed it, like at all these different stages, like the start with Florence Pugh, like her whole monologue is obviously directly about that. And a lot of the stuff with the void is obviously directly about that, like the, your, you know, kind of shadow self. But like the parts, like the fact that whenever they went to the void, it's literally you watching yourself do the worst thing you remember yourself doing, just over and over and over again, is like such a, like everyone is like, everyone's been in that spot. Like everyone's been in that spot where you're that you can't get past that. Like you can't get past looking at yourself that way. And so the fact that you have them walk through that and then to have like Alexei's speech where he's like, that's why you have to be around like the people that care about you, because I don't see you that way. Like you see yourself that way and you're always going to until you're like hear someone else tell you what they see. And that was such a like touching and impactful way to handle like a really, really delicate situation or a really delicate topic within the context of a Marvel superhero movie. And I thought it was just like, it was both, and it never detracted from it being a Marvel superhero movie. Like, that's what's crazy. It was never like, let's go over here and have like a serious talk about mental
health.
Here's
the message. Yeah, two things that came to my mind. One, that specific speech was executed so well. I didn't feel like it was out of place. I didn't feel like it was forced. I feel like as much of a joke as Red Guardian is, I buy enough growth for him to deliver that moment. I rewatched Black Widow last weekend. Obviously, he's hilarious and all that. There are some hints of an actual sensitivity there to Yelena specifically in that movie. I don't think it's that crazy to think that he would then be growing to that point. Secondly, in the execution department, I loved that, like how they ended that. You said it doesn't detract, right? He delivers this thing and she goes, okay, that's pretty good. And then right away they see the void and they have to kind of walk out. They didn't beat us over the head with it and go, okay, now they're going to hug and hold it. And like, you forget that all this is going on. It's like, no, they're still going to get interrupted by, this can't be a full therapy session because we're about to still be attacked by this guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess in all the execution fronts, I totally bought it. And I still got so emotional, even though it was in the final trailer, so emotional when she says, but I have so many.
Yeah.
Was like, ugh.
It's just.
And obviously hers is pretty dramatic as someone who has a young daughter. Her background's traumatic. Moon Knight always messed me up. And that's the same thing they did with Here with Bob. There was a line as a parent that just kills me that Bob's dad is like beating. And then he stands up, and if you heard really faintly in the background, his mom says, sit down, you always make it worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was trying to stand up for his mom.
Right.
And that's just like, oh, that's like the worst.
Well, and he had like parenting the line.
And the most brutal, like Moon Knight.
Yeah, well, and like early in the movie, remember Bob's, like when they're trying to get out of the vault and something goes wrong, he's like, Bob, you always make it worse.
Yeah, it's just. Also, if you're a parent, don't ever say that to your kids. It's
you not supposed to?
Yeah, it's on.
That's all my parents ever told. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's why I brought you here.
I do wonder, though, how much of that as a parent, you just if you're paying that close attention to somebody, you are kind of forced to develop a deeper empathy in general, I would think. Probably. Because it's like,
well, and to be clear, I wasn't saying like I'm now better or less. Like I am still self-centered, but there's something to like you. You know, you wake up every day going like, okay, how can I have a fun day today? How can I be productive? Yeah. How can I do this? And now all of a sudden you have someone else that you have to go, how can they have a good day? How can I take care of them? How can, you know what I mean? So just, you're kind of not forced, but you all of a sudden have a new part of you that you have to kind of.
No, I mean, yeah, about. I do think it's like it's a forced empathy in a good way. Like, I think it's an I think that there are plenty of ways to achieve that, but I think that like, that's a very fair perspective on this movie, because I think that that's one of the perspectives that's kind of offered by the movie. Like, I feel like they root so much of this whole discussion in the Yelena Alexei relationship.
Right.
And so it is like, that's where you get the most
father daughter.
Like the most direct stuff, but it's sort of just like, it's like the prism through which you then see like that reflected or refracted, I don't know, light across the whole story. You know, it's like you see all these different characters, obviously the Void and Sentry, but you see in all the conversations that you start to have, like with Walker, even with Bucky, that it is this like, it's this battle with yourself that you then realize you actually can't win yourself. Like there's never a point where you can like be like, okay, I've now like solved it and I can walk back into the group and be ready to contribute, because like that's how you just wind up going deeper and deeper, which is why I thought that this movie's like the choice to end, like you think that you're about to get like a big New York battle. They're like setting up for that. And you never get beyond that one set in front of the building, because then they go into these spaces. And the fact that it all culminates with him, like, they have to pull him back from like beating himself up, literally, which was such an like,
and the fight just being within that void. So it's yeah. like in a little upstairs room, and you know,
it's so like, it's so small, like yeah. and intimate, but epic.
That again, that ties all these points together. It was like connected, but not crazy, like not fan servicey, but it was big and epic. And yet the threat, like we joke about the New York people having to go through a lot.
Yeah.
This, in my understanding, was this is maybe only like 30 seconds
yeah.
to them or whatever, a couple minutes.
Yeah.
And then they all came back. And so like it ended up being like small, even though it was terrifying.
Yeah.
So pretty isolated. You know, and the other thing is, like you said this earlier, they never really beat you over the head with it. There's an alternate version of this movie where when the Thunderbolts decide to go back in and get Yelena, it could have been much cheesier.
Right.
And instead, there was all this subtlety throughout the film in both the script and the acting performances that I really loved, where I think Ghost says, we got to go back and get her. I'm going to go back and get her.
Yeah.
And then Bucky says, and then what? You're just going to die. And then John says, no, she might be right. I saw something before. And that's all they do. And they don't like show him like valiantly running in, or I don't know. Just like the subtlety of like all of a sudden they're there.
Yeah.
Because which shows you as the audience, like they went back in, they got canceled or whatever. And there was a lot of that. Like, I love the subtle nods to when you rewatch Black Widow, Natasha's the one where her mother says, how did you never lose your heart? Like Natasha is the standout in the family that no matter all this trauma, she kind of has this good soul, this sincere soul.
Which is also funny because through the whole Infinity Saga, she's the one that's like the coldest of the bunch.
Sure. But now they're starting to plant little hints of that in Yelena.
Yeah.
And you'll notice like the whole point early on when John Walker's being such a dick, as he says to Bob, she's like, hey, whoa. And then multiple times in the movie, just subtly trying to break up the fight or be like, what are we doing here? I love it. These subtle hints that it's all these subtle things. It's a little look like when John Walker, when Bucky says, oh, are you really? Because your wife and your kid left you. And then she just looks at him and it's a subtlety like in her performance. They're like, like she feels for him now, or she now sees him in a different light, and they didn't have to like go, this is why.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Dude, yeah, no, totally. And I think like it's a really nuanced portrayal of all these things, but it's also just a fresh subject, like thematically, because I was just thinking we have had some really brutal, really heart-wrenching and great, like I'm not taking away from those at all, like stories in general in the post-Infinity Saga MCU, but we've had like a lot of them, whether they were like the whole movie or just really memorable parts of them, that were about like the loss of a close loved one. Like they either culminated in that, like Thor Love and Thunder, or it's like a real, it's like the, you know, tentpole moment, like in No Way Home with Aunt May. And those moments are great. And those, like, again, they are even like Multiverse of Madness. You get a lot of that because of what she's driven by.
And the lost relationship there.
You know? Yeah. Like, but this is, it's a much harder thing to sell. Like, it's everyone immediately connects with like, oh, you lose someone you love. Like, that really hurts. But this, like, you really kind of had to, like, it had to do some work setting the table and making you care enough about these characters to care like about their interior lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw one reviewer say that they now understand why this was a hard movie to market as they walked out. And I think I understand that point too. For part of the reason you're saying, first of all, they couldn't market that it was the new Avengers,
right,
which probably would have sold some more tickets.
Oh, for sure.
Secondly, cause they want that to be a surprise,
but I'm
and
sure
then this kind of thing. Yeah. Isn't as easy of a sell.
Yeah.
Especially with some characters that are from movies or projects that aren't, like John Walker's not from like a super beloved project already.
Yeah.
You know, so you're asking people to buy in to these characters, not knowing that much about them, or the stuff you do know about them, you maybe don't love all the things that you've seen.
And, you know, like I just,
And it's going to be about them wrestling with their own selves.
And this is my, this is my last thought. And then we can wrap the big three and dive back into nitty gritty stuff. But, just wrapping all that up from my perspective, I think we spend so much time on this podcast, and it's my favorite thing to do, just talking about like these character arcs across all these different projects. And it's so fun because sometimes things you don't know what's intentional and what just kind of shows up and what like threads are going to be pulled on. But there are also plenty of times as we've been doing this where you and I kind of speculate ahead of something, like they've got this that they can work with and this that they can work with. And it's like what I was saying with the new Avengers thing earlier, like it, there are times where it's like, okay, no, like what you did was great. I do think that there is like some really interesting ground to explore there that is now maybe, you know, going to be unexplored. And I love that like our saga so far, walking through all this, like I saw all of that. Like on the screen, you know what I mean? Well, like my point being, like we, you know, you walk through and it's like they've been through this and they've been through this, and wouldn't that leave this person in this place? And then like, where do they go from there? And I love that this is not a movie where they're just like, yeah, like yeah, you know, she grew up Russian, she grew up like with like phase powers. Let's like get into it. They actually make the movie about all of that, and that's just something that I think is again really easy to bypass. And we have seen bypassed in my opinion, like in plenty of projects where it's like, I think it was, I think Lance in our Discord after our saga so far said something about like, those are some like interesting takes on these characters. Like, I hope that they like see them through, like, because like, I like that the, like, I like this perspective.
We nailed it.
But it's like, I just think it's nice knowing like, it's not that like, if everyone listened to us, it would be better. It's more like I love wanting something and feeling like I'm setting really high expectations and like high standards on that point.
And then getting it.
And then getting all of it. Like I'm kind of not used to that feeling lately.
Right. I specifically remember making the YouTube video showing John Walker, you know, in the by the crib.
Yeah.
And saying that could be something they really lean into. That yeah. He's also broken in this way. Like literally in our script for that thing, to toot our own horn, we said a couple times, like, you see where this is going, right?
Right.
You know? And it was kind of going where we thought. But not in like a, it was still unexpected in that I was still just gripped to the screen, not knowing exactly where they were going to go
yeah.
plot-wise. Just the threads were followed up that we wanted.
Well, and like, I think it's so important. And this is what I would like want to emphasize for people that are asking about this as opposed to like Suicide Squad or other kind of like band of anti-heroes things. Like this is, I really love that it's not about like them being bad, like being extra bad and being willing to like shoot everybody because they don't really care, but they're like doing the right thing. Like this sort of, like it's not crass because they're all just like bad guy, good guys. It's more that they're all like failures, which I think is a lot.
That's a better word. Yeah.
It, you know what I mean? Like I think it, that to me is even way
the bad,
more
the bad guy, fresh. Good guy thing gets blurry anyways. That's the whole point of it too, is all of them where they were going to get killed, incinerated, were sent there thinking they were doing the right quote-unquote thing.
Yeah.
Only to then be betrayed. So it's like, who's bad guy? Good guy. That's even what JLD talks about in the film. So yeah. Yeah, it's more interesting. That's a good word. They weren't bad or good. They're just failures in some ways.
And she kind of, in her speech, like,
we all suck. She says that three
times.
Well,
in JLD's speech, though, where she's just like brutally, like, ripping them all apart.
What did Yelena say? She says, you're trash, just like to your family or something.
Yeah, she's like,
that's what he says.
But like, again, okay. That's the thing. It's like, it reminds me of like Guardians 2 when Rocket is talking to Quill like at the very end. And he's talking about like when you push people away and sometimes you steal batteries even though you don't need them. Like, I feel like this movie, again, without feeling like, without needing to say the line, and it's not like a James Gunn dig, like without needing to say, like, I'm pushing you away. You know, it's like, I love that, like, you see Yelena, like, snap in, like, when, again, she's failed. Like, because I feel like she takes it harder because she feels like she's the one that was able to kind of connect with Bob and feels like she should have been able to. And then it goes poorly. And so then she just, like, reacts and lashes out at all of them separately and is, like, so mean all of a sudden.
Well, she right before that says, you're a failure, you're a failure, you're a failure. We've all failed. We all just failed. Or we'll lose, or you're a loser, you're a loser, you're a loser. We just lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll lose again. So this is, like, pointless or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, because, like, Ghost is like, I think that, like, you got beat up worse than I did. And she's like, yeah, I did. I suck. I'm terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, which I loved her saying that so many times. Okay, we have so much more to get into, and we're going to get into it on the other side of this break. We want to tell you about Homage. Look at these shirts. You want to look as cool as us?
Yeah. I'm sitting here in Austin in April wearing a sweatshirt, and I don't even mind.
Can they see the AC unit cranked to 64?
I might still ditch it after the commercial break also. It's such a nice sweatshirt, though, right?
It's such a nice sweatshirt.
The Sinister Six, you got this Ditko art. All of the stuff that they have on Homage, it's funny because how many, like, sports shirts did you?
I got just one sports shirt. I have three total Homage shirts now. This one, Spider-Man. I got a Captain America Shield shirt.
Oh, nice.
And then I got a Seattle Mariners shirt. And I wore my Seattle Mariners shirt yesterday. It's incredible feeling, great printing. But our promo code is live for just a few days. Just a few days on Homage. So if you want to go there and save some more money, but even if the code isn't working for some reason, please click on the link in the show notes. It really helps us and it helps support them. And plus, you're going to get legit stuff. And as we mentioned earlier, check out organicpricebooks.com. You can use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK there to save money on incredible, just great condition, fast shipping, good customer service, comic books shipped right to your door. And by the way, with Homage, we had a mistake on our front of what size we told them for me, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And they were incredible, incredibly fast to respond. They rushed me three new shirts so I could be wearing this one today. Just so great, man, to work with. So Homage, use the link in the show notes. We'll be right back.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
I do want to briefly mention just how funny I thought the movie was.
Oh, yeah.
Without ever being, like, I didn't find myself feeling like jokes missed in an uncomfortable way. We were in a theater with press, which is always a little bit less of a thing. But there were people laughing. I mean, I got applause started at the end of the film, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
There were people laughing at a lot of the jokes to the point where I could envision in a theater full of fans there would have been a lot of hits on some of the jokes. Just some of them I thought were really funny. So,
you know, I think what I also love, and this is something that I think we just need to talk about in general. So I'm not, there's not really an overarching point other than like the connective tissue we talked about where it feels like it's at home. It also extends, it starts to do the work that they have to do between now and Secret Wars in a way that's already like, again, I still think the Brave New World premise, like the adamantium stuff from the Celestial, is a really clever way to bring adamantium in and to start connecting that stuff. But I think it was also a little like, not really by fault of that movie. It's just like there's a giant celestial hand. So it's like, look, you know, like Eternals. And then now like, but this did it in a way that was like, it wasn't like, hey, look, we're connecting things. It just did connect things. Like you just kind of stood back and it was like, and
I agree, but a little bit bad example. Shots fired on unnecessarily so on that specific point. But yes, in general, I agree with this movie. As soon as I looked at you.
No, I'm truly not like, you see what I'm saying though? Like,
yes, I just would have used a different example because I think the adamantium thing was pretty good, like subtly how to connect those. But yes, for sure.
No, I think the adamantium thing is really cool. I just kind of mean it's a very like, we could tell exactly everything that's being connected from like the marketing for Brave New World. Like you see the big celestial hand. Like, so that my point is it was just a little bit more like, okay, I'm glad that they're starting to do this, but this is the movie where they did a surprising amount, like more beyond that in a way that doesn't feel really like they're trying to do that. And so I love that they're following up on like Falcon Winter Soldier in legitimate ways. Like I like that Bucky talks to John the way that he talks to John.
Right. I was thinking about that too in that specific sequence. I'm like, wait a second. They go back.
Yeah.
They have history here.
And it's like, I always think
Bucky doesn't have a ton of history with Yelena, right?
Right.
Have they ever really spent, I have to think about that. Any time together. But that's a good point. I'm like, yeah, but he can talk to John a little bit differently.
Well, and I it's like that line.
So that's why I like that John Walker was like, Bucky, you know me. We're telling you the truth.
This is really intense for you, isn't it, Walker?
Obviously,
they follow through on threads from like a lot of the Thunderbolt, like their prior appearances. But again, like the fact that they are then able to connect it and move forward into like they deal with the vacancy of the Avengers, but they also one thing that I've just been wondering kind of my whole way through, or at least like the last couple years of the multiverse saga is like, what do people think is the status of the Avengers? Like, what does the common person think? Because right afterwards, you have like in Far From Home, Spider-Man is kind of being treated as a hero and as like an Avenger of sorts. And then even in like Multiverse of Madness, Wanda and Strange are talking and he's like talking about getting Avengers to help and choosing between other like bug themed ones. And so there is this kind of like the Avengers exist and people reference them, but obviously there is no like there are individual Avengers, but there is not an Avengers team that's functioning as such.
Right. Quantumania, like I think like Ant-Man is mostly celebrated. He's writing a book. Like I think people kind of want them.
Well, and like in Brave New World, in fairness, like they obviously have the conversation about restarting the Avengers. But again, that to me almost like, I think in a lot of ways, this movie is actually going to enhance Brave New World for me because I think
I hope so.
Well, like the questions that I had there, like, you know, before anyone leaves this thing, I'm being unfair to Brave New World. I feel like this is one where like Feige is really good at like knowing how to either retroactively or maybe like he knew that this was going to be like a 1-2 punch, but figure out ways to fill in the gaps. And I think that like part of my problem with Brave New World was there were just parts that I just wanted to, like, I felt like we were diving right back in, and it's not that I wanted to do like a ton of table setting, but this is where I got a sense of what, like, what the wider world is actually feeling like. Like,
I would love to know what the actual behind the scenes process is for something like this. Do you know how that works? Like, for example, they announced they're doing Thunderbolts, what, 2 years ago? Something like that?
Probably longer.
Is that like the Marvel Parliament? Is that Kevin and Brad and no longer Victoria? Is that them getting together and going, this could be a story kind of generically about this new Avengers team? Is like, how much do they then go, that would be a fun idea? And then they bring on someone like Jake and they go, you know what I'm saying? At what point is or do they go, we want a Thunderbolts movie, we have no idea what it's about? Or does Jake come to them and go, I think it'd be fun to tell this story about the new Avengers? And they go, that might work. And then, you know, go right in and then let's see what it works. You know, what part of it do they go, you got to have a Fantastic Four post-credit scene? Or, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I'm sure it's like, it's different for certain projects because.
Or does Jake write the whole thing, or Eric and Jake work on the whole thing and then they go, that's perfect, but can you tweak this one thing so that it fits a little bit better in the big
scope? I mean, I know that the way that it worked historically, and I feel a bit like with the change in pace, they would probably have brought some of this back. You would have someone that would write the script, I guess, after they decide, like, between all the projects that are out there, like, potential, we want to pursue this. I think that they would normally, like, probably have Eric draft it up. And then they would bring on Jake, and then they would slowly work to figure out where it falls in the greater MCU. Like, probably Eric working primarily with, like, I think members of Feige's team, but also I think, like, the writers have to talk with each other to some degree, in as much as Marvel will allow them.
Like, I remember when we had Loveness on, he talked about how he had talked to Waldron.
Right, right. But then I think, like, I think the real answer to your question is, like, after, like, the reason that Marvel, and maybe that's different here, but the reason that Marvel got the reputation for the reshoots was not because they were, like, having these issues and having to go back and reshoot things. It was often that, like, Feige would sort of let the directors be the directors on set, but Feige had a sense of what he wanted the movie to do in relation to the other movies. So once they had everything, I think he was pretty involved in the editing process. And I think he would then find gaps or find things where he would want to insert something and kind of, like, tilt it in this direction. The reason I'm wondering about that, though, is, like, in a situation like this where there
was, like, famously low amount of reshoots.
But at the same time, that's what I think makes the movie work so well on that front is, if you think about it, there's very little, like, that you needed to, like, there weren't, like, inserted elements.
Right. Well, I mean, that could just be a positive effect of the slowdown. Like, if there is less going on, there's less it has to connect to. And so maybe from the jump, they can all get on the same page. Kevin, Brad, and Jake, and Eric, and go, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what we want to do. This is what you want us to accomplish. Here's how we can make this all work without, you know, because there's not that much else going on that they have to then do it. Like, for example, though, there was no tie into Mayor Fisk or anything like that.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So
it
only extends so far as how much is going on and how much is it going to try to carry, or maybe they even knew that. And it's a call by Jake to be like, that's just too much for this film. Like, if we want to make this a great movie, that's, like, up for awards, we can't get into all this other stuff. And maybe that's a back and forth the whole time. I will say another thing. Let's toot our horn again.
I wonder if there's, like, a TV in the background somewhere that says Mayor Fisk on it. I need to look for that the next time.
Maybe someone,
like, anything
that.
Like that.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, that stuff's easy to miss on the first time. Just to toot our horn one more time, like, I think now about halfway through the year, about halfway through 2025, we have mostly, like, my gut, your gut, has been correct. We've had correct reads on these things. And I think it has become kind of easy to see. Like we talked about how going into it, I was a little bit hesitant about Brave New World because of all these external factors and the kind of rumblings we had heard kind of proved to be true. There were some things that were reshot and like, it felt a little bit not as like in sync. And then we talked about obviously the famous one that I am almost tired of bringing up, which was the Daredevil Born Again, like kind of reshoots and the strike affecting it or whatever. But if you go back on this podcast, literally a year ago, I said, I think Thunderbolts is going to be the project where they could have scrapped it.
Yeah.
That's where they could have started over, and you've not heard anything negative at all. In fact, as we got closer, we only started hearing positive things, and we started getting like the fact that the premiere was 2 weeks in advance and the social media embargo, like that is now proving to be a thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think they knew this movie slaps. So who cares when people see it? In fact, let's show them earlier. Let's get reactions out to drive ticket sales up because the reviews are going to be so positive that people are going to want to go see it. And so I just want to say, we kind of nailed those two things. Like, and just so everyone's aware, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, I have the same feeling about Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So don't bail yet.
Yeah. Fantastic Four, man, which like, seeing that when we were watching the end credits at the end, like the very end of the end credits, I saw like the theme, the Giacchino Fantastic Four theme credited.
You did.
And I was like, and then, it delivered. It was
you
so,
asked
it was
me
so
if that was just because it was the IMAX open. And I said, yeah, probably. And then you got all over my case later. Like, you weren't listening to me. I told you it was for something
else. I need to be believed.
That's one of my favorite aspects of Avengers Infinity War. And I'm now getting back to the same spot feeling, not maybe to the same degree because of Tony and Thor and Cap.
Right.
That's missing. But they are setting me back up in the same spot where one of the aspects of that movie that I think works so well is just it becomes a playground for what you could dream up all these conversations and interactions being like the, and the Russos even talked about that. Like half of the fun of that movie is, oh my gosh, Iron Man gets to talk to Star-Lord and the Guardians. Right. And like, what would that mean for him? And what in the world would Spider-Man think about this kind of galactic stuff? Or like when Spider-Man faces a giant purple alien and Doctor Strange talking to Spider-Man and the miscommunication there. Yeah. And then those groups everywhere, like even getting to see Bucky in Wakanda be like, oh, I love this place. And like, you just, you get all these interactions. Where you're like, yes, I want to know how that character, because you read the comics, which I've read now, the Fantastic Four, you get invested in these characters. And then you kind of want to see how would they interact with something that's like fish out of water. Totally. Yeah. And so I saw that ship and I'm thinking, oh man, it would be so fun to listen to Reed Richards talk to Red Guardian.
Yeah.
And like, and then I talked about how, like, you know, the Fantastic Four is supposed to be retro in that it feels like a 60s America kind of vibe, but also futuristic in that they're also supposed to be super advanced. And so maybe socially the way they interact is very retro, but they're still developing tech that's far beyond what 60s in America is now. But like, what do they do when they stumble upon someone like Bob, who's actually, you know, weird and a past meth addict and like doesn't get that, but is way stronger than them if he ever turns into this thing. And like, how does Reed handle that?
Yeah.
Reed and Yelena and like, and not that we're going to get a ton of that, but I just mean like, those are the kind of things where I'm back to the same kind of place where, I mean, that's what made that Thor and Guardian scene so special at the very top of Infinity War.
Do you think that they are going to, like, the new Avengers will be the ones to intercept the Fantastic Four?
I don't think so, no. But I don't know why not.
I wonder, like, you bringing up the Marvels earlier has me thinking, like, I guess Fury is still involved with Sabre? Because I'm just thinking, like, if they're talking about a space crisis, Fury is like, I think, still the guy that's supposed to be over. Like, I know that it crashed, but I do think he's supposed to be overseeing like our planetary defense. So I'm wondering, like, if is he involved is he going to be the one that connects with the Fantastic Four? Because that would be really fun.
Right, yeah. I got to think about that, too. Who would be, like, the face of it?
If they're going to talk about, like, a space crisis. Well, no, okay, and that's the other thing, like, because I think the face of it would probably be Bucky, which I love because, I mean, Sebastian Stan just continues to get better and better.
It's also crazy because we've talked about that character, like, running out of places to go.
Yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah. No, this is, like, such
a... And now he's, like, the leader of the new Avengers.
And it does make sense because he, like, leads the Thunderbolts and the new Avengers in the comics. Like, whenever Steve Rogers dies, Bucky's, like, takes Captain America's place. And... It, like, I love that because I think he's earned it as a character. Like, he's more than anybody else. Like, that feels, again, unforced. But the other thing, I loved how much of a badass they made Bucky, like, all through. Like, even like, his arms ripped off.
Coach,
but, like,
preach.
He's, like, the reveal, the entry is, like, the coolest the Winter Soldier's been since the Winter Soldier.
Cool. Hey, he has cool music. I love Red Guardian being his hype man.
Yeah.
It's amazing. What kind of serum did you get? Like, we're just basically the same. He's, we're, like, a little different, but the same.
Normal. Hydra.
Oh, the Winter Soldier. That's another interaction I'm talking about, though. Like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
Because, like, he's literally watching a highlight tape of his Russian propaganda.
Right.
So this guy who, like, fantasizes about this Russian past now gets to meet the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's, yeah, I mean, I think what I'm realizing that makes me so happy, it's sort of like what you were just saying about Infinity War. I've been looking ahead to Doomsday and I've been wondering, like, we know we have all these characters out there. A lot of them we've only really seen, like, once or twice, which is great. But it's going to be really hard for me to feel about those characters just from a time perspective, the way that I did about the Infinity War characters.
And that is a fear I have.
But this movie is the first time I was thinking, like, okay, this is a whole group of characters, none of which are, like, core Avengers members that we had that level of connection with. Bucky is close, but, like, getting to the end of this, like, I genuinely care about all of those characters now, and that's a good feeling. Like, knowing that, and they're not legacy characters in the same way. Like, it doesn't count for me to feel that way about Star-Lord or about, like, Thor at this point, because that was already earned, or even Sam to a degree. But, like, because I was just thinking, like, okay, you're going to have all these clashes, and even if we do get these like reprise roles from the original Avengers in some capacity in one or both movies, like, that doesn't fully work. Like, if you don't have a core of like, you know, 616 Marvel, like, mainline characters to be rooted in, like, you want someone to be like the home team.
Right.
And I haven't felt like we had a home team.
Right, that is such a good point. Let's say this is not going to happen, but let's say you saw an alternate version of Thor, Cap, and Tony, and they're there to represent their universe. Just as fans, even though you don't know anything about those specific people, you're going to have the nostalgia of kind of pulling for their universe because you're like, oh, that's
right.
But now I think I will also have a pull to, like, Yelena,
yeah,
and Bucky. There'll be a part of me that'll be like, oh,
yeah.
But I don't want Yelena and Bucky's universe to lose either.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? And I think in the past, it would have been all nostalgia. You're right. Before this movie, I would have been like,
yeah,
that's so cool to see them. Who really cares about this team? You're right. Now it's like, no, I'll be like, oh, well, don't talk to Yelena that way.
And it's like, that's what, like, you know, and again, I don't know exactly how they're adapting any of this, but, like, the final two universes in the Secret Wars comic being the ultimate and main Marvel universes, like, it benefits from, and I think maybe even less so there, frankly, but it benefits from, like, there are different timeline, like, universes, and there were people that were reading Ultimate Spider-Man and super invested in like Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man comics at the same time that they were reading like Jonathan Hickman's Avengers and Fantastic Four prior and really invested in those comics. So that when you did have the like one of these universes like has to die, you did feel invested on both sides. And I think that that like that is really important, because otherwise you're not quite getting like it all just becomes spectacle a little bit.
Right. I think that Marvel has such a unique once in a 20-year opportunity here that they better be thinking about getting it right, because it feels so obvious that they're setting up towards they could one time without resetting and rebooting one time. They have a chance to basically say they could pick all the characters. They could almost like go to the actors and go, who wants to be here for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
And then go, you're all going to make it and everyone else isn't going to make it. And that's why they still have ramifications. But it feels like they're basically going to be like, okay, Pedro, like, do you want to stay as Reed Richards? Because then if so, yours will like make the incursion, you know? And like, honestly, I'm not saying, I don't think they'll do this. I don't think they'll do this at all. But they could even theoretically do something like an alternate reality Captain America makes it into the 616.
Or, oh, yeah.
Or Tony Stark.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes out of his universe because it's dying, but they save him into the 616 and then they just pick up with Tony.
Right.
And as viewer, it's not the exact same Tony, but as viewers, you'd be like, okay, Tony's back.
Yeah,
and
I mean, like Gamora.
He's running it. Right. And I'm not, you know, with him specifically, Robert Downey Jr. is getting pretty old. And
he's like intentionally doing
Doom. And he's playing
Doom. Yeah.
Right. But like that. And it's interesting because we'd have to go character by character. I don't want to do that right now. We have so much time to do that.
I think that there's
a room. Because like Thor, I think, is ready just to head out.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're going to do like a big send-off for him at some point.
Yeah.
I think Chris Evans will just do his thing. I don't think he'd do that. But I there probably could be a character that I'm thinking about.
Maybe
Vision or something that they go, do you want to be a part of this? Because like you can come back in and
he's already back in though, or will be.
Well, yeah, and they kind of did that in a different way. If they give him his memories back or something, or maybe he interacts with another Vision who gives him the memories, you know. Or what I'm saying is like they could pick and choose though once and for all. Same with all the X-Men. Did this X-Men work in this thing, but not in this thing? Well, we'll just pick this character, you know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I do.
You can never do it again. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, or at least not for 20 years.
No, for sure. You can't, like, I don't think anyone wants, not Marvel, like, I don't think anyone wants more multiverse stuff after this, because everyone started doing it at the same time. I think that, like, but you're right. They have a really interesting opportunity, and I don't, you know, with the X-Men, I have to believe that they're going to want to, like, start from scratch on that, because the Fox stuff is just so messy, but I don't know. Maybe, I mean,
yeah,
but I think that that's like the really fun question is like, are there going to be any weird, like, are there going to be swaps? I think one thing that I think there is the opportunity for them to go even bolder than that. And I don't think that they would, but I guess it just depends on what their plans are post Secret Wars. Like they could actually like, destroy and remake the world where all of these characters are in it. And it could either be something where it's like the characters are just inserted, like the end of Secret Wars, the comic, you now have Miles Morales like miraculously inserted into the 616 instead of the universe he came from. So they could just do that with all these characters. You could also do something even bigger if they want to like really wipe the slate clean. Like they could actually like mess with some of the ongoing narratives if they want to, like if there are things that have gotten a little like wobbly on the edges, they could kind of like pretty easily prune, I guess. And that's the other thing that I was going to ask, like with all this stuff, like we also know Tom Hiddleston's in Doomsday.
Right, and I have no idea what his role could possibly be because of how we saw him in Loki. Like, he's supposed to be keeping all these timelines.
Yeah.
And maybe he didn't fully understand the ramifications of letting them all branch, because that was the whole point of the ending, is like they're all going to branch now. Let's pause on that, because we have so much time to get into Doomsday.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
But I do, like,
he's one of the legacy characters that I will be very much invested in.
I guess that's my overall like point here in terms of like the kind of home team thing is I'm thinking through like when they were reading out the, you know, showing on the chairs.
He's not really a home team. He's like his own thing. Kind of.
Exactly. Like he's his own thing. Obviously the X-Men are their own thing. It's all fun and exciting and interesting. But I think I was left with this feeling like, oh, the Fantastic Four. Yeah. And like, I bet they're coming over to the 616. And that's like been our prediction for what the Fantastic Four movie would potentially end with. But I just had that feeling of like, what would it take for me to feel like, oh, they're coming to the 616? Like, they're not just like coming to the universe where we're being told all these other things happen. But like, what does it feel like? Like what you're saying with like the Thor Guardians moment, where it feels like Thor is like entering the Guardians, like
their world.
Yeah. I feel like that, like it's hard to explain, but this movie has such a, like, it has so much heart that it has like fleshed out the entire universe again to where now it feels like I've got that like investment and I love it. So it's going to feel that way now when the Fantastic Four arrive, like, oh, they're in the MCU. I know what the MCU looks like and feels like.
I totally agree.
The Sentry stuff, like Lewis Pullman's,
he was great.
He was so good. And he played.
He was great. He looked great. His voice when he was the voice was so cool that like the sound was great. Everything was great. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, that last shot of Florence Pugh, I never guessed from the trailer, that final spot, that was Yelena trying to get to him to give him like a hug and like pull him back.
Oh,
and that shot, I had chills when she's like launching herself over and like diving. That it was like, so that was cool. Such a cool moment for her.
Yeah. Those were all the things that I really do think, and this makes sense, like the Eric Pearson stuff, like, and Greg, who writes our newsletter, which if you're listening, you should subscribe to.
Yes, please.
You can go to the FFWpodcast.com. That's the easiest way, I think.
Yep.
I know that Greg was saying that if this movie was as great as people were saying, we would have to give Eric Pearson his due. And I do think that this shows how much the like floating fortress just like visual aspect disrupted Black Widow for people, because like obviously there's a like Thunderbolts has a bunch of other really interesting stuff from like a directing standpoint that Black Widow didn't, but it's like I see it here now, like when you do, even when you get like big in terms of the ideas, and obviously like the Sentry's powers are way bigger than anything in Black Widow, they were able to like keep everything, like something about opening that movie up the way that they did at the end, which is why you and I have talked about if it had been like a bunker finale, I think really took away from how like gritty and sort of in your face like those characters can be, like when you're really trying to capture that, like the kind, you know, shaky cam thing.
And I love that movie. I love that movie.
But I think that
it could have done those characters even more justice at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess my point is to say, like, I feel like that is that makes me think that Eric Pearson teamed with like a director, like just a team in general on this, where they're wanting to also like push it forward and do really interesting things. I think you're getting like a really good mix there.
It also, you talked about the Guardians references early on in this episode. And so kind of to bring it together, I have no idea the actual process of Eric's, like, I don't know if he was, cause there was two writers on it. And I don't know if like someone was brought in to tighten it or he had to, but we always talk about with Guardians, that's kind of what we liked so much about the first one was it's Gunn, he's doing his thing. And then Marcus McFeely come in and just like, you know, trim the edges, trim the fat. And it turns into one of the best movies of that decade. And
right.
I think that now this has, I'm not saying that's what happened, but it has the same feel. It has a feel where like they trimmed the fat.
Yeah.
In fact, by the way, I think there were some lines in the trailer that weren't even in the movie.
Yeah.
For the record. But it's like, I don't know if someone else was brought in or whatever. But yeah, I my point is I am all on the train of him, Eric, being involved
again
when they wanted to have him involved.
The movie is like, it's what you and I were talking about early on, like, or I guess like last week or two episodes ago, Marvel, like through so much of the multiverse saga, has been trying to figure out how to make a movie, like ever since all the accusations of them not, you know, kind of not being director friendly, like not really letting directors like have their own vision. You've seen Marvel trying to give directors more of that. And that looks like experimentation. And a lot of that's just happened in front of us. So you get like Eternals and you get Love and Thunder and you get Multiverse of Madness. And everyone's mileage on those can vary.
Right. But you also get WandaVision.
Yeah.
And with Shackman.
Yeah. Like you get really interesting stamps on things. But this is the one where I'm like, it feels like a next step, not just because it's so great, but because it's doing that in a way that feels like a natural next step for a Marvel movie. Like you walked out of Love and Thunder and you were like, that was a Taika Waititi movie. At the red carpet, Kevin Feige, someone asked them like, what genre of a movie is this?
No big deal. We're at the red carpet.
And he said, Taika Waititi.
In LA. You ever heard of it?
And I think like
we'll send pics.
You could say this. We have. You could say the same things about like all these kind of like, you know, this director really made his mark. Like, and that's not all post Infinity Saga. Like, you could say that about like Joe Johnson's first Avenger. You know,
right.
My point is like, this is one where of all the last few years, as they famously tried to give directors more control, it feels like there's a symbiosis there. And it's like, okay, this is like whatever this is it. Like it does, they don't all need to be this kind of movie,
yeah, right,
this tone, but like
that's a good call.
Find someone that's like really wanting to, like a whole team of people that want to push it but care about like they're not too cool to care about the ongoing Marvel narrative either.
Right. That is such a good point. It's a great way to close it, too. I will come back and rank this movie at a different time. And I know people are often, you know, you can find our rankings on the FFWpodcast.com. But I kind of, when I watch these films, I kind of have almost two experiences. The first experience is just how engulfed am I in the story? How much is it my scene? And I was watching going like, this is really my scene. And I thought Deadpool and Wolverine was really well done. This is way more my scene,
yeah,
than Deadpool and Wolverine is.
Yeah.
Even what they're like, the subject matter, the jokes, but also like the characters' pasts. I have investment there. All this stuff.
Yeah.
And that movie was great. So I'm not. But like when I have to rank it and I start thinking about where these things sit, like this is way more my scene than Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Which is a very critically beloved, yeah, movie, and I think is good, really good. I think right now it's the bottom of our first tier, and I stand by that. But so I'm thinking already, like, this to me is already, like, my experience was higher than that. But then this is what I love so much. My second level of evaluation, we've talked about this before, is to what degree do I have to give a disclaimer to somebody else? I can say, go see No Way Home. It's amazing, right? There are a couple visual things and a few jokes that are kind of wonky, but it's amazing, right? And that's the closest thing. But you have to almost, yeah, include this, like, by the way, I realize that's kind of like a lame joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Not related to that. But then obviously there's more extreme degrees of that.
Yeah.
Which is like, you'll really like this, but...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this part's a little bit, you know...
No.
Even with Daredevil Born Again, there's a little bit of like, well, it was you know, it was kind of put together, but it's really, really, really great. And it is. Yeah. That was also one of the closest things for me, like telling someone like Chris or Grant,
yeah,
or,
yeah,
my dad, trust me, you'll like it. And I still stand by that. This, on that second level, is like the movie beyond a shadow of a doubt since Endgame.
Yeah.
Since Endgame.
Yeah.
That I would say, oh, wow, like Grant's going to love this movie. Chris, my brother, would love this movie. He works in mental health. My brother would love this movie. What, like, there's no, I don't have to give a disclaimer of like, it's like top-notch looking, sounding, acted. At least that was my first impression. So like on that front, like I think Candace is going to love it.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, I think what's so crazy, we've gone back and forth and talked about the different genres and all this stuff, not just tonight, but over the past couple months. This is actually like, It is a fusion of like Guardians and the Winter Soldier almost perfectly.
Correct. It almost has a little bit of Everything Everywhere All at Once, like thematically too, and in the indie feel. I'm not saying it's better than Guardians or Winter Soldier, but I'm saying
no,
like,
but it's,
yeah, it has like,
yeah,
the team up and the humor and the heart that Guardians has with some of the like fun action and like grounded,
yeah,
visceral nature of like the highway fight.
Yeah, because that's Winter Soldier, the
elevator like, fight.
And that's the stuff. Like,
it's not as action as that movie, obviously.
And it's not, close,
and it's
though,
not
I mean,
as like kind of goofy as, yeah, Guardians, you know? It is. It's a mashup. In my mind right now, that's about where I have it. Like better than Guardians, yeah, 3. Like this was one of the best movies they've made. I mean, this is like in that Winter Soldier, Iron Man,
yeah,
range.
No, and that's range. Like I was gonna say, I love, like, Candace will never mind me putting Guardians on. She will like get so bored when I put the Winter Soldier on. She doesn't care enough about like those characters to care about the stakes of any of it in the Winter Soldier. And she's not just going to like she'll like watch it once. But with Guardians, like she,
I get that.
It's funny. You know, she like there's it's. And so I think what's really impressive about Thunderbolts is it is like it's like coding all of the like the MCU driven stuff in stuff that's way more accessible. And so I think that like she will love Thunderbolts, and she'll also love Thunderbolts in a like whether or not it's a Marvel movie. And I kind of love that. Like she can enjoy it for that reason. You and I can enjoy it for that reason, but also enjoy it for everything that it's doing, like with these MCU plot threads. And I think that that is like the really, like, that's why I said at the beginning, it's like a remarkable thing. Cause I just like, whether or not you think it's the best of, you know, the last phase or two or more than that, like I would challenge someone to find a project that is more like unifying, like in what it's bringing together, like the different jobs that it's doing effectively, like the kind of genres that it's sort of bridging, and specifically a project that's been as kind of like MCU central and that like non-MCU fan friendly. Like I don't know what that would be.
I think No Way Home is probably the, yeah, it's just, it's in that range, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because again, like No Way Home and Deadpool and Wolverine don't require you to be a big MCU fan, but they also don't really do a ton with like the ongoing like MCU. Like they're really Spider-Man and like Deadpool centric.
Yeah.
But
wow. I'm tired. I loved it. I loved it. What do we need to tell people? If you're in Texas, we're going to be at Austin Books and Comics on Saturday, May 3, depending on when you're listening to this. We will have seen the film a second time. And man, we are not going away. We plan on covering some stuff here. Obviously, before Fantastic Four comes out in July, I want to go over the old Fantastic Four movies, which I don't even know that I've seen them all. Which, yeah, would be a really fun journey. And then Ironheart is in there too. Like Ironheart's in June, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to be covering a lot of stuff. I want to reflect on this movie. I want to reflect on Daredevil Born Again. And so there's still a lot of really fun stuff to come. Obviously, in the grander scheme of things, we're kind of just getting started,
right,
with some of this stuff. So we'll come back to this movie. We appreciate all of you guys. There are so many ways to support us, and I think you probably know this by now. You can head over to the ffwpodcast.com and find a lot of the stuff. We have a Discord channel that's fun with a bunch of cool people from this community chatting. You can buy Friends From Work merchandise. You can go to homage.com and use our link in the show notes, organic price books. And then we have Friends From Work Plus, which is just more of this, bonus discussions, lots of stuff. But either way, we just thank you for being here.
Yeah.
These are always special days. And then when I start rapping them, I realize like, wow, I'm tired. And I'm like really feeling, I'm feeling like warm and nostalgic. It happens every time as I wrap it up.
I do want to say one more time before we close. We're legit on the homage plug. I'm saying it because like, I really like this. And I like being able to rep things that I genuinely like. So I've got to take advantage of it while we have the chance. The designs are like,
hold it up.
Yeah. The designs are like, straight from like Marvel Comics, like classic artists. Like they're not like ripoffs or like off-brand anythings. Like it's like you've got these licensed like Steve Ditko things, and they've got like all these different Marvel properties. I've got like a bunch of different shirts, but then again, I love that you can also get like, it's great like brother-in-law birthday present material, because you can get like various pop culture sports memorabilia. Anyway, we can sign off. I was looking down at the design and I had to get like one more.
I'm going to say one more thing that's totally inappropriate and has nothing to do with this episode, but I just can't help. Yeah, I'm feeling so nostalgic and how special this is. I'm just going to say this. We are working really hard to watch Fantastic Four together and then maybe do something at Comic-Con in San Diego. Like, how special would it be to watch Fantastic Four in Los Angeles or here and then go out there and hang at Comic-Con because they're the same weekend. And so, just a little teaser. I'm working on trying to make that happen. Trying to make that. Just think about it. Think about it. Trying to make that happen. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, guys. We love you. Bye.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.